I'd like to turn to the second book of Samuel and the sixth chapter. We're looking at the life of David. To Samuel chapter 6, the ark is brought to Jerusalem. Verse 1 of 2 Samuel chapter 6. Again, David gathered all the choice men of Israel, 30,000. And David arose and went with all the people who were with him from Baal Judah to bring up from there the ark of God, whose name is called by the name, the Lord of hosts, who dwells between the cherubim. So they set the ark of God on a new cart, and brought it out of the house of Abinadab, which was on the hill. And Uzzah and Ahio, the sons of Abinadab, drove the new cart. And they brought it out of the house of Abinadab, which was on the hill, accompanying the ark of God. And Ahio went before the ark. Then David and all the house of Israel played music before the Lord on all kinds of instruments of fir wood, on harps, on stringed instruments, on tambourines, on sistrums, and on cymbals. I'm going to leave it there for the moment. Now, for those of you who perhaps haven't been following it, we arrive at one of the high points of David's career. Now, we've been looking at the life of David for some time. I must admit, I can now call him King David. He's had a tough life, but a tough God has seen him through. And now he finds himself king over Israel. The nation is united, and he has conquered Jerusalem. The Philistines in the previous chapter attacked him, and God saw them off too. Everything seems to be going well. And so we come to that first verse. David gathered all the choice men of Israel. 30,000. It would help if I turned that on, wouldn't it? Now, we might be thinking, what's going to happen now? Here is a strong king with a united country. And he gathers once more all his choice men. Here is some great endeavor of national importance. There's a euphoria in Israel. We're going from strength to strength. And indeed, a state of national ecstasy follows in the next verses. David arose and went with all the people who were with him from Baal Judah to bring up from there the Ark of God. The Ark of God, that gold-plated wooden box which contains the tablets of the law of God given to Moses on Sinai, Aaron's rod and the jar of manna. Why does he want to bring the Ark? Well, the Ark was that very real and tangible symbol of the presence of God in Israel. And David, as God's anointed king, now occupying the city which God had given him, wants the Ark of the Lord to be there also. Interestingly, there is, I think, no record of David consulting God on this matter. And yet, I think his motives were quite good. It does make sense. However, as we're going to read later on, things do go wrong. And we must always be careful as believers that we don't conflate what we want with what God wants. And there's a very interesting lesson for that in the previous chapter. The Philistines attacked David twice. And twice he says, should I go and fight them? And on the first occasion, God says, go. On the second occasion, he says, don't go. Well, on this occasion, I don't see David seeking God's will. And yet,
His motives were right, his motives were fair. But the lesson there is, seek God's will. Don't assume that because you want it, it's the will of heaven. The writer of 2 Samuel goes on, describing the ark, whose name is called by the name, the Lord of hosts who dwells between the cherubim. What lovely theology is there being described. The very presence of God among his people, epitomized by this gold-plated box. You know, ever since the Garden of Eden, when Adam and Eve rebelled against God, we were excluded from the presence of God. We were not fit to enter. You see, we have a problem called sin. And some people's sins are obvious and they go to court. Other people's sins are more respectable. Envy, pride, jealousy. There's no British law against those. But there is a law of heaven. And because of our sin, inherited from Adam and all the stuff we generate and manufacture for ourselves, we are excluded from the presence of God. We cannot enter paradise. And yet here we have in Old Testament Israel, that very symbol of the gospel whereby God himself chooses to dwell with us. All the religions of the world are man trying to reach out into the dark, trying to grasp what he does not understand. But in the gospel, we have the God of heaven reaching down to us that we might reach out and be lifted out of that miry clay. Here, the name of God is so sacred, it's simply the name, the Lord of hosts. The ark is a visible symbol of the invisible God. In 1 Chronicles chapter 28, David calls it the footstool of our God. This sacred symbol David wants to bring out of exile, as it were, and put it at the very heart of his kingdom. In verse 3, we're told, so they set the ark of God on a new cart. I imagine that no expense has been spared. We need to bring the Ark of the Covenant to Jerusalem. We'll not find an old cart. We'll bring a new one. Never been used before. Perhaps we'll give it a new lick of paint. Make it look pristine. Perhaps bedeck it with velvet. Lovely. I have no doubt that in verse 3, we have there described the very best of carts available. In Numbers chapter 3, though, and chapter 5, and chapter 7, didn't God say that the ark should be transported on poles? Oh, but what does it matter? Poles, cart, poles, so long as it gets there. After all, a cart is probably a bit easier. Perhaps it's more dignified. It could be more stable. It's certainly less work. And in 1 Samuel chapter 6, the Philistines transported it on a cart. And by and large, it did the trick. Well, friends, methods are as important as our aims. I've used the illustration before. You might put stolen money in our offering box. Your intentions in that regard might be right, but let me assure you, God doesn't want it. Keep it. No, don't keep it. Give it back. Yeah. But David's intentions here are good. He wants the ark. He wants the symbol of the presence of God to be with him at Jerusalem. He's just compromised a little bit on the methodology. But that does matter. It does matter. He brought it out of the house of Abinadab, which was on the hill. And Uzzah and Ahio, the sons of Abinadab, drove the new cart. Again, Numbers chapter 3 says the ark should have been handled by the sons of Kohath. I'm sure the sons of Abinadab were just as strong. Perhaps they were better looking. And after all, the ark has been in their custody for 2 or 3 generations. Surely they're entitled to be the ones to transport the ark. Man-made traditions might well be harmless, but when they contradict the revealed word of God, throw them away. So what do we have so far? The ark is being moved in a way not prescribed by God, by people not authorized by God. But it doesn't seem to have concerned or troubled anyone. They bring it out of the house, which was on the hill. Ahio went before it. I imagine it was quite a spectacle. It's being done with decorum and dignity. And in verse 5, it gets even better. And David and all the house of Israel played music before the Lord. And then it goes on to describe the instruments they used, of fir wood, harps, stringed instruments, tambourines, sistrums, cymbals. I'm sure this is a really great opportunity for worship. And it says they made music before the Lord. They're not doing it for David's honour, they're doing it for the Lord's honour. I imagine this ancient orchestra made a very delectable sound. I have no doubt about it. And from a human perspective, it looked wonderful and it sounded wonderful. But what of heaven's perspective? Now in my notes here, I'm contrasting our church with a full church. We've actually done quite well today for us. So, you know, not often I'm in this difficulty. But there are churches out there which from a musical point of view, with their semi-professional musicians, it sounds absolutely fabulous. And I'm not saying, per se, God doesn't approve of that. I'm not saying that. But what I am saying is that although something might look wonderful from a human perspective, the human perspective is irrelevant. It's the Lord's perspective. Does it honour him? Does it glorify him? Or does it make us look good? Oh, I enjoyed the worship. Bully for you! Did the God of heaven. And I put it to you that the God of heaven is not enjoying what we've just read. I think it was in 1 Samuel where Samuel says to Saul, to obey is better than sacrifice. Oh, you say, but these are only small things. A cart rather than poles, the sons of Abinadab, what difference does it make? To us, not very much. But to God, you wouldn't have told us if it wasn't important. And then in verse 6, things go wrong from a human perspective as well. And when they came to Nacon's threshing floor, Uzzah put out his hand to the ark of God and took hold of it, for the oxen stumbled. The oxen stumbled. It's a minor thing. Of course, if the oxen hadn't been doing the Kohathites' job, their stumbling wouldn't have mattered at all. But they stumbled. A small thing. And because they stumbled, the cart was imbalanced. And the ark began to slide. And Uzzah does perhaps what we would do as well. He puts his hand out to steady it. After all, we don't want the ark on the floor. It could become damaged, it could break. He does what most of us, I think, would have done. He has been looking after the ark for some time. He knows it well enough. But clearly, in all that time, he never really understood it. You see, it wasn't just that gold-plated wooden box containing some interesting artifacts. It represented the very presence of God on earth. It should have been covered. The ark of God was not to be seen. It was not to be touched. The Philistines learned the hard way. The people of God, it would seem, were just as ignorant. So if this golden box represents the very presence of God on earth, and we have not got the right to enter the presence of God because of sin, touching it was absolutely forbidden. And we're told in verse 7, the anger of the Lord was aroused against Uzzah. Who does he think he is? Presuming to touch what represents the presence of God on earth. We cannot just barge into God's presence on our terms. Sometimes people say to me, oh, call round whenever you're passing. You know, I can't do that. Sometimes I've been outside somebody's house and I phone them up and I say, are you in today? Yes, I am. No problem. And I'll knock on the door. I can't just turn up. I don't know what's going on in your home. It might be something incredibly profound. Well, more so here than courtesy or politeness. We have no right. We cannot enter the presence of God. Think of Esther, who could not even enter the presence of her own husband without first being invited. The whole layout of the tabernacle, of which the ark was central, was designed to communicate that we cannot easily enter the presence of God, not without consecration and preparation and invitation. We're told God struck him there for his error, and he died there by the ark of God. Suddenly, the music has stopped. The laughter has been silenced and the smiles have faded. It was all going so well. It was a wonderful worship event. And God put a stop to it. The day has been spoiled and wrecked. The text makes it clear that Uzzah was not acting maliciously. He wasn't acting, I don't think, through pride or wickedness per se. It was an error. It was ignorance, perhaps. What does the Lord say in Numbers chapter 4? And when Aaron and his sons have finished covering the sanctuary and all the furnishings of the sanctuary, when the camp is set to go, then the sons of Kohath shall come to carry them, but they shall not touch any holy thing, lest they die. God was not doing anything in this passage which he had not already warned people about. You know, people say hell is unjust and unfair. But the Bible is absolutely clear. God has warned us in advance. There's a wonderful quote from Charles Spurgeon. It's been quoted so many times, I know. If you sincerely drink poison, it will kill you. If you sincerely cut your throat, you will die. If you sincerely believe a lie, you will suffer the consequences. You must not only be sincere, you must be right. I think Uzzah was being quite sincere, but he was wrong. You know, the atheists look at Christians and say, you make God up. You project your own ideas onto heaven. God is just your creation. The God of 2 Samuel 6 is not a human creation. He does not act as we would expect him to act. You know what we'd expect him to do? Ah, never mind, Uzzah. You tried your best. You obviously try not to do it next time, but you know, fair enough. God doesn't say that. He strikes him dead straight away. This passage paints God in a light that we humans do not like. This is not the simple-minded God of love that some people like to believe in. Here is a holy and righteous God with dizzyingly high moral standards. And we're told in verse 8, David became angry because of the Lord's outbreak against Uzzah. And he called the name of the place Perez Uzzah to this day. With whom is David angry? Is he angry with God? We often blame God when things go wrong, don't we? The people who blame God when things go wrong are often the first to ignore him when things go well. Is he angry with Uzzah? If only he hadn't touched it. Was he angry with the oxen? Maybe David was angry with himself. The book stopped with him. He was in charge of the day. He approved the cart. He was busy worshipping and clapping and singing and dancing when he should have been obeying. Notice the use of the word outbreak against Uzzah. I appreciate some versions will vary. It's the same word used in the previous chapter, when the Lord defeated the Philistines. The Lord has broken through my enemies before me like a breakthrough of water. We quite like it when God breaks out against the Philistines. We're not so keen when God breaks out against our own. Judgment starts with the house of God. David was afraid of the Lord that day. And he said, how can the ark of the Lord come to me? You know, if he had asked that question and had that feeling at the beginning of the chapter, Uzzah would still have been alive. And the worship event would have continued. He's afraid. Does he send it back? Does he move it? The whole episode underlines the difficulties of doing something first without seeking God's will. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. David is a great man, but he could have been wiser. There was perhaps an assumption at the beginning of the passage that I will move the ark and I will move it my way. And maybe he has a better understanding of God now than he had before. He was blasé before. The golden boy who could do no wrong. He conquers Jerusalem. He unites the kingdom. He conquers the Philistines twice. We serve God on his terms, not ours. Do you want a relationship with God? Do you want to go to heaven? You do it on his terms, not yours. He has provided the way. Walk in it. And there are so many people now who think they're going to heaven because of how good they are, or because of how kind they are, or because they've performed this religious ritual, or they've been on that pilgrimage. Jesus said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father but by me." If you are someone who tries to come to God except through Jesus Christ, you are Uzzah reaching out to touch the ark. Thank God. In Jesus Christ, who is the image of the invisible God, who is God among us, Emmanuel. In the gospel, it's the ark who reaches out to us. So David in verse 10 would not move the ark of the Lord with him into the city of David, but David took aside into the house of Obed-Edom the Gittite. Now a Gittite could mean someone from Gath, or more likely he lived at Gath-Rimmon. Almost certainly the man was a Levite, the very kind of people who should have taken charge of the ark to begin with. The ark of the Lord remained in the house of Obed-Edom the Gittite 3 months. Then look at that last expression. And the Lord blessed Obed-Edom and all his household. A few verses ago, somebody was dying because they touched the ark. Now the ark is a source of incredible blessing. I put it to you that Obed-Edom obeys God when it comes to looking after the ark. You don't touch it, you don't see it, you reverence it. Whereas Uzzah ignored all of that and said, God will work according to my schedule, according to my time frame, according to my will. And he died as a result. The ark caused the death of one, but blessing to another. Indeed, there are many who sincerely reach out, claiming to touch the divine, perhaps seeming to enjoy a familiarity with him, but they can only approach in reality through Christ. Perhaps Uzzah thought the ark a mere ornament, a toy, an artifact, like any other piece of valuable furniture. But in so doing, he showed a poor understanding of the fiery and terrifying holiness of God. We're going to celebrate the Lord's Supper soon. And it's a strange thing we do. We're going to proclaim the death of the Son of God. Somebody once left a previous church saying we were obsessed with blood and sacrifice. And she didn't like it. Well, the Bible is clear. The way to God is a bloodied, filthy wooden cross upon which Jesus Christ was fastened, that the filthy, hell-deserving sinners in this chapel today might be washed clean and might stand in the presence of God, might enter Eden, might take from the tree of life, might not only touch the ark, but have Jesus Christ live in them. Most assuredly, I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door, but climbs up some other way, the same is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the doorkeeper opens, and the sheep hear his voice. And he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. And when he brings out his own sheep, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. Yet they will by no means follow a stranger, but will flee from him, for they do not know the voice of a stranger. Jesus used this illustration, but they did not understand the things which he spoke to them. Then Jesus said to them again, "Most assuredly I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All whoever came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear them. I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved, and will go in and out and find pasture. The thief does not come except to steal and to kill and destroy. I have come that they may have life, and that they may have it more abundantly."